got no home, no kids, no wife, not much to show for all my mother's pains. And I've accepted doing time. I live the life, I did the crimes, but I still get sad to be here when it rains. Sad to be here when it rains. On sunny days I walk the yard, respected by both cons and guards. My life's my own, there's no one that I blame. And everybody's got to be somewhere. Most of the time, you know I don't care, but I still get sad to be here when it rains. It's always sad to be here when it rains. Well, people say that when it rains it pours. Ah, but lovers just hold tighter and love more. And people say a little rain must fall. The children run and play. They like a rainy day, and I don't, that's all.
So you're moving to New York, huh?
Yeah.
My neck of the woods.
Greetings. Welcome to Prison Pipeline. This is Ruth Kovach bringing you Prison Pipeline. I hope that you're all with us again today. Reggae Bob is in Hawaii. Today we're going to look at some books and music, but first, our words from Mamiya Abu-Jamal.
Immigration's echoes. Driven as much by political necessity as by xenophobic fears, the immigration issue has grabbed the headlines and the talking heads of the media. The recent mass demonstrations have only fueled the issue further, and among blacks come echoes of nativism, a fear-driven rejection of these newcomers who are taking our jobs. While it can be argued that many of the jobs taken by Mexican immigrants are jobs that most Americans, black or white, won't do, the fear remains, and black radio, newspapers, and other media are awash in expressions of concern and, frankly, xenophobia. This happens, I'm convinced, in the context of a nation with a deep racial hierarchy, which traditionally places blacks at the permanent bottom and amidst a period which showed with painful clarity that these historical rankings are still amongst us, witness Katrina. That said, perhaps history offers lessons for us in this time threatened by change that will allow us to find a way out of this cul-de-sac. In a time of greatest peril, when Africans in the U.S. were fighting for their freedom from the American forces of slavocracy, two uniquely American communities came to their aid, Native peoples and Mexicans. How so, you ask? Before the U.S. Civil War, Americans fought at least two wars with the Seminoles, a people then living in Florida. The reason for the wars? The Seminoles, unlike other area tribes, refused to turn in black runaways from American plantations. U.S. Army General Thomas Jessup, who fought the Seminoles with its hundreds of black warriors, was moved to write, "This, you may be assured, is a Negro, not an Indian war." When the pro-slavery white expansionist war went bad for the Seminoles, red and black Seminoles fled to Mexico, which abolished slavery in 1829, where they were given land and joined the Mexican army to defend the country from invading gringos. The Seminoles were led by Coacuchi, also known as Wildcat, and he was assisted by a black man named John Horse. Writer William Loren Katz in his 1986 book, Black Indians, A Hidden Heritage, informs us that Mexico became a home that wasn't possible in the United States. He writes, Seminoles arrived in a country that had ended slavery in 1829 and had welcomed slave fugitives ever since. Some 3,000 U.S. blacks lived peaceably in Mexico, most of them far from the Rio Grande border. Periodically, slave-hunting posses plunged across the river to seize black people for sale back home. Some Mexican politicians conspired with these desperados, the better to finance their political campaigns. Seminole families had hardly settled down when, in 1851, U.S. outlaw John Rip Ford rode into Mexico with a band of 400 men. Wildcat and John Horse were called upon to drive out the bandits, former Texas Rangers and unemployed Texans. 60 Seminole fighters drove back the Texans without a casualty. When black folks needed help the most, Mexico stood on freedom's side. What does this mean 150 years later? It means that blacks and browns have a shared history and are neither strangers nor necessarily antagonists. History can open doors of recognition and remembrance. It can heal not the past, but the present. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
Thank you, Mumia. Always something good to say. We can listen to him every time and still learn something. The music opening the show was When It Rains, played by Boz Lazoff. Boz Lazoff is well known for his organization in North Dakota Human Kindness Foundation. Also, he is in charge of the Prison Ashram Project. He goes from prison to prison, teaching meditation and Buddhism to prisoners. He reached thousands, perhaps hundreds, thousands of prisoners, talking about meditation, helping them prepare their souls, prepare their spirits, prepare their self-image, so that when they're finally released from their incarceration, they're able to cope with life on the outside, life in the street, in a better way. I was fortunate enough to go to a meeting last Sunday where he did a presentation. He talked about his work. He talked about the meditation procedures that he uses. And he's really one fine fellow. If you ever get a chance to hear him or see him, do catch what he has to say. It's very profound. Also, he presents music that he sings, songs that he's written while he plays the guitar. And he's just one of the first books and music that I wanted to mention today. The name of his latest book is We're All Doing Time. Of course, he talks about we're all on a search for our own soul, for our own basic oneness. And it takes time to do that. And we're doing time as we look for it. And the folks who are incarcerated are doing time looking for themselves. And it's his contention. And he certainly gave convincing arguments and witnesses that showed that some of the people who took part in his program came out of prison better people than when they went in, because they were doing their time searching for themselves and their souls. We're going to listen to something else now. So here we go. That's Aragon Starr singing the Peltier song. Certainly, we all look forward to the one bright and shining morning when we shall be free. Those who are incarcerated think they want to be free. Well, some of us out here would look forward to a bright and shining morning when we too could be free, because we all are carrying our burdens. But the story of Leonard Peltier is one that's well known. I won't spend a lot of time on it. His book is Prison Writings, My Life as My Life is My Sundance, he says. And it's a beautiful book. It tells not only his story, but it tells a great deal about his incarceration and what goes on in prison. And I wrote a little poem about it because I call it Stolen Words from Leonard Peltier. And what I have here is a lot of phrases that I've pieced together in, I hope, a poetic way. But it gives you a bit of insight into what Leonard Peltier had to say about his incarceration. As night falls, I begin to pray for the great healing to come to begin this day. This Sundancer finds no peace, as the noise and shadows never cease. I didn't do the crime, but I'm kept in a cell. My 5x9 cinder block is my private hell. Under a rough green blanket I try to write, unable to read during the semi-dark night. It's not dark, shadows are everywhere. It's not quiet, the noise always fills the air. Ventilation roars, rumbles, and hisses from other cells. Clanks, creakings, flushings, gurgling, buzzers, and bells. The guard's keys jangle to a mindless radio squawk. Unintelligible, droning voices on loudspeakers talk. I know one of those voices might be my groan, blending into the chorus, a desperate moan. My life still has meaning as another day ends. My spirit does not break, although it bends. I must live to cry out from hilltops and graves. This voice must declare the stories of braves. To speak your mind and heart is the Indian way, to honor our time on Mother Earth each day. There is a meaning to being alive. It's not just enough to be alive and to be and to survive. Those who died for being Indians can still be heard, guilty of being themselves, guilty of believing false words. Sitting Bull, Crazy Horse, Frank Clearwater, to name a few. There's the voices of Bobby Garcia and May Aquish, too. Their strength and spirits fill the Sundancer's heart. For I know all are one and are never apart. If you like some of those words, you certainly would like the Prison Writings by Leonard Peltier. He tells the story of when in 1975 at Ogallala in South Dakota. There was an invasion of FBI men. Over 60 of them to a very small population came in, blazing and causing all sorts of violence. And at the end of it, a few of the FBI men were dead, and Leonard Peltier was falsely accused, unjustly convicted, and has been in prison since 1975. In 1985, after he'd served over 10 years, the court actually said, "We do not know who shot the agents," but he still is in prison. He's still serving two life sentences. The fact is, he's a political prisoner. He was too active, too important, too effective helping the Native American cause through AIM. And so is Mumia Abu-Jamal, a political prisoner. And what I hope we all know is that in these times, political prisoners are starting to fill our prisons. The COINTELPRO techniques back that put Mumia in prison are in full force, still surrounding us. And I wanted to bring attention to the writings of some of these great men. And I hope that if you don't know the story of Leonard Peltier, you'll certainly read his book, Prison Writings. Some other books I thought I'd mention tonight, one is Funhouse Mirror. Funhouse Mirror is written by Robert Ellis Gordon and the inmates at the Washington Correction System. Ellis Gordon went to quite a few prisons in the state of Washington, and he ran writing classes. And he found it very effective that in these writing classes he encouraged prisoners to journal or to keep a diary or to just write their thoughts. And, you know, some of us have heard before about psychiatrists who get people to keep a jury, some of us to keep a journal. Some of us know that we ourselves write letters to people that we never mail because we get it all said and we feel good and then we don't have to mail it. And this kind of device is what Ellis Gordon has used in many of the prison situations. And his book, The Funhouse Mirror, is a collection of things written by these prisoners, and every single one of them is fascinating. Every single one of them is well-written and beautiful, heart-wrenching. Some of them are a little bit humorous, and some are just kind of informative and help us feel and hear what their plight is and help us recognize how big a job of prison reform we have ahead of us. One, for instance, written by T.J. Granek, gives 10 tips for beginners for survival in prison. I'll just read the titles of the tips, but he writes about a page on each of these. Number one, commit an honorable crime. We all know murder one is the most honorable crime. Number two, don't gamble. Number three, be poor. That's easy, isn't it? Number four, never loan anyone anything. Number five, buy cigarettes. You might want to know the reason they buy cigarettes is because it's almost as good as money for trading. Number six, make no eye contact. Number seven, pick your friends carefully. That's true on the outside too, isn't it? Number eight, fight and fight dirty. Being tough is one of the essential parts of survival in prison. Number nine, be ugly. And he makes a point of saying that the pretty boys have a harder time than the ugly men. Number 10, mind your own business. That's good advice too, isn't it? Number 11, keep a good porn collection. You got to have one. You got to brag about it. You got to share it. I guess it's the way you prove your masculinity. Number 12, learn to masturbate quickly because you don't have much time to do it slowly. Number 13, never, ever look into another man's cell. They have such a little bit of privacy, such a small claim to dignity, that no one wants their cell looked into. I don't think that's hard to understand. Number 14, don't talk to staff, especially guards. Wouldn't that be awful if someone thought you were a collaborator or a snitch? And number 15 concludes with, never snitch. And I think most of us can figure out why that's probably a good idea. That's just a sample of some of the writings that these prisoners gave. Another book I kind of wanted to show you or talk about today is called Wall Tappings. And this is an anthology of writings by women who have been in prison. Most of them are political prisoners. Some of them you've heard of, some of them you haven't. They're listed chronologically going back to 1793, Madame Roland, and go through the years. It's a 300-page book. And near the end, one of the more recent prisoners that you might recognize is Erica Huggins. And you know that Erica Huggins was connected to the Black Panther Party. And she has quite a bit to say in this book. And, of course, it gives a short biography of Erica, her life. She was born in 1948, her life with the Black Panthers and how she wound up in prison and some of her attitudes. And the last little thing I want to give from this book on wall tappings is to read Erica's untitled poem. Tall, skinny, plain. Tall, skinny, plain I am. Erica, 22. Fuzzy hair, droopy eyes, long feet. I love people, love nature, love, love. I am a revolutionary. Nothing special. One soul, one life willing to give it, ready to die. And that gives us a pretty good insight into Erica, in case you aren't familiar with her. So as long as today I'm talking about books and music that might be of interest to the audience of Prison Pipeline people, I went to the web and I put in the words prison books. I thought, oh, I'll get the names of a few good books to recommend to you. Well, I'm afraid you're going to have to go into the web and do it yourself because I couldn't choose any. It came up with 48,300 listings, and that's a little more than I could handle listing today. So then I thought, well, I'll give you some good music. And that came up with 12,700,000 listings of songs by prisoners or about prisoners or about prison life. And if you go to the web and look at those, quite a few of them are anthology or collections. And many of them list some of your favorite artists. The country western singers have done a lot of singing about prison. And so I would recommend that you check out that, because there's other music besides country western, rock, rap, and much more. There's other books, and I haven't even touched on them. But I think what I'm trying to say today is you need to listen and you need to read if you want to have a real picture, a real glimpse of a population of this country of 1.5 million people in prison. An overwhelming percentage are people of color. An overwhelming number of them have been unjustly put in prison. Perhaps if you would be so open-minded as to say everyone ever arrested might have done something wrong, I can't be liberal in my statement that 100% of them are not being punished appropriately. The terms that are given, the sentencing rules, the treatment in prison, the stripping of dignity and pride that begins the very minute they're stopped by an officer, the time of the arrest, the time of the hearing, the time of the jury. We need to do something about this 1.5 million people, half of which will be out on the street and part of our society. And what needs to be done, if we can't get them out, if we can't get them free, if we can't take care of the injustices, at least we should have some rehabilitation programs going so that those who are released, half of 1.5 million prisoners, rehabilitation programs that would release these folks able to cope with life and able to contribute to society. And those rehabilitation programs are not in place. They're not happening. A few that are there have proven over and over that they are effective. And if you would call tonight's program kind of a loop thing, it brings me right back to Bo Lazoff, who is running a program that is a rehabilitation program, who works with prisoners, who takes them where they are, who doesn't try to decide if they should or shouldn't be there, are they good or bad or right or wrong or fair or unfair. He just says, look at yourself. And he claims that the prisoners who go through his program come out better people than they went in, and he goes further than that and claims that they're better people than a lot of us who have never been in. He talks about the traumatic catastrophe that may be ahead for us here in this country because of all the turmoil. I won't even discuss the many things that we fear, global warming, economic failure, political catastrophes. And he said the survivors of such an event will be the people who have found themselves, the people who are at peace with themselves, the people who can think clearly, the people who can cope. He points out that during the Great Depression, the ones that jumped out the window were the wealthy people. They had too much, they didn't know what to do with it, and they never looked at themselves. They were so so concerned with materialism and greed that they never really looked at themselves. So the program that Bo offers is beneficial to all, whether you're incarcerated or not. I hope that you'll look into some of the things he has to say. And thank you for listening to Prison Pipeline. It's really been a pleasure to be with you. I feel that I'm getting closer and closer to the truth, but I keep searching. And if you want to keep searching with me, read some of these books, listen to some of this music, and let me hear from you and help me in my search. In the near future, I hope to have guests from Books for Prisoners and a guest from Western Prison Project and a few other interesting guests. So now we're going to go out with number 12 on our record by Aragon Starr, Dream On. And I hope you do. Dream on of a better time and a better day. Thanks, folks. Be talking to you next week. Bye-bye.
When I was a kid, I lived in my own world, a childlike fantasy. I thought that my big dreams would be enough to change reality. They they say I'm not strong enough. They say I'm not good enough. Well, I've got news for you. I'm making my dreams come true.